John, I you came with a recommend from Heather as an awesome podcast guest. So tell us a little bit about your awesomeness, what you're doing in the world right now.
Oh, man. Well, thank you, Heather, first of all. great to be with you, Angus and Scott. Yeah, my name's John Sikorski, and I'm a former law enforcement officer from the Atlanta area. I've managed quite a few projects, but had a bit of back up for a minute. I've had a couple of different diverse careers, as many of us have. But after law enforcement, my career took me to Northern Alberta, Canada, in Fort McMurray. And I actually changed careers 100%, left law enforcement, and went into industrial distribution and manufacturing. I worked for even a company called Komatsu in their surface mining division, and had the opportunity to build and be a part of the build team for multiple P&H 4100 electric rope mining shovels. And these shovels are 73 feet tall and are about roughly, you know, not to give too many specifics, but roughly between $20 and $25 million a piece. So they're one of the primary pieces of equipment that makes these surface mining operations run, makes them money. And so that's really where, after law enforcement, I got my foot into project management, was building these shovels. And then through my career path, I went into industrial distribution and have had the pleasure of working on several other projects in the industrial space along the way, whether it's conveying or whether it's just repairs and rebuilds for some of these manufacturing facilities, large CapEx projects and stuff like that. So that's me in a nutshell.
And now you're starting Law Enforcement Connect, right? So let's not forget to talk about our partnership with Law Enforcement Connect.
Absolutely. It's a great segue. So Law Enforcement Connect is also the most recent venture. It was something that started as a passion project for me. When I left law enforcement in 2015, there wasn't a whole lot of assistance and not a whole lot of service organizations out there that supported law enforcement in career transition. And so over the last 5 or 6 years here, I've identified a need and really have helped quite a few North American police officers across the U.S. and Canada to make that transition from law enforcement into the private sector, from what I like to call service to civilian. And so through DOL Coach, DOL offers an incredible service, really joining the law enforcement skill set that a police officer has, you know, through project management. And a lot of cops don't even realize they're working in projects until DOL, through their training and trainers as well, identify for police officers, hey, you've been doing this for years. And to be quite honest with you, I was one of those. I did not realize how many projects I had actually participated in, managed, and then managed the project managers once I was out of law enforcement as well, through those shovel builds and other projects as well. But and DOL and Law Enforcement Connect, or LEC, we've really built a partnership in a way where police officers can identify and define what their experience and their skill set is, and really generate some understanding of these are actual skill sets, whether it was a traffic stop, whether it's a roadside incident per se. There's always usually a beginning and definitely an end to a lot of these interactions and transactions in law enforcement. For me, it could have been a SWAT engagement. There's definitely a beginning. There's a planning period. There's a success factor there. And then there was always a follow-up or an after-action review. So in a lot of ways, law enforcement is directly correlated with project management. And so LEC and DOL, we want to bring that to light for these police officers so they can be successful in their second careers or their careers after law enforcement.
And it's So first of all, I think that we should title this episode Angus Service to Civilian. I love that because that's a really awesome title or phrase. But I think, you know, veterans get a whole lot of credit that, you know, the blue line and those who serve in the police departments don't get. And we honor that, right? We say, you know, I support police and we do this. Until I spoke to you probably a year, year and a half ago, John, it didn't resonate to me that they were also in a massive career transition, that a lot of police officers don't retire. A lot of police officers serve just like military members serve. They might do, you know, 3 or 5, 10 and out, but that's still service. And we give it a bunch of talking points, but we weren't putting things into action as a society. And obviously once I realized that, then the partnership is easy solutions. Right. So it's interesting that Law Enforcement Connect bridges that gap. So tell me where you want to take LEC in the future. Like, talk to us about, like, if you had a BHAG, a big, hairy, audacious goal for LEC, what would it be? And how can those listening to this or the DOL team support you in getting LEC there?
Absolutely. And Scott, I love the acronyms here. First it was BLUF and now it's BHAG. And, but yeah, so my long-term goal with LEC is really to do two things. One is what I'm doing currently, and that's communicate directly with the individuals. We need to, just like the military, like you just mentioned, most cops don't serve 30 years. They just don't, for whether it's, you know, for whatever reason. One thing other than that, we've also identified, my board of advisors and I have identified at LEC that cops also don't simply voluntarily leave either. There is a massive involuntary contingent, whether it's through injury, whether it's through, you know, it could be perhaps an incident where stress or anxiety was introduced, and now all of a sudden it just, you know, I've heard like incidents with children have derailed a lot of law enforcement officers' careers, and they're like, nope, I'm out of here, I'm done. That was it.
Who can blame them, right? That's pretty horrific to see. And yeah, Again, it's one of those things, right? Like, as a combat veteran, I get, you know, the whole like, oh, do you have PTSD? What have you seen? And I'm going, reading stories about state troopers having to routinely give, you know, notifications to family members that, you know, a deceased in a road accident or whatever, like, that's not anything that's published a whole lot, but oh my Lord, can you imagine having to do that night after night after, I mean, you have done it. So God bless you for taking upon that shield and doing it. And the stressors are very real, right? But far too often, I think as a society, we just kind of want to go, they'll be fine. They'll be all right. And in reality,
or they signed up for this.
They signed up for this. Exactly. So there's a talking point.
I'd like to throw something in there if you don't mind. You know, I was, I think I'm third or fourth generation law enforcement. And something I've thought about over the years is, have we just insulated ourselves from society and just offloaded that gritty ugliness to the police and the other service sectors and said, well done you. So we no longer, we can just insulate ourselves from the ugliness or what I like to call the underbelly of society.
John's a better spokesman for that than I am, but I'm going to say unhesitatingly, yes, we have. Here in Franklin, Tennessee, I do the same thing, right? Like, I'm like, oh, they serve and they're just over there. But, you know, I go to my son's soccer game and there's school resource officers there from the sheriff's department, right? I drop them off at school and there's sheriff's department cars. And I funny story, and we'll get back to your underbelly question there, Angus, in a second. But I was at church on Sunday and the church service got out and I saw a Franklin Police Department an officer standing there. So I kind of beelined up to him and I was expecting his hand to like drop to his, you know, Glock or something. And I'm like, hey, sorry, random question. What's your name? And he started off with officer. I'm like, no, officer. Like, what's your first name? And so he told me his first name was Jordan. And I said, all right, Jordan, we run project management training for first responders. Who in Franklin PD do I need to talk to? And he was looking at me and he goes, wait, you run training specifically for police? I'm like, well, it's not specifically for police, but we do it at a greatly discounted rate for first responders. And all of a sudden this big smile appears and he goes,
yeah,
you got to talk to Lieutenant Anderson. And he's digging in his phone and he's giving me Lieutenant Anderson's email and phone number. And I'm like, all right, God bless you. Thanks for your time. But it was almost like it was such an alien interaction to them.
Yeah.
And I tell the story to say to you, Angus, like, yes, we have segregated them, right? They are just the men and women in blue in the corner protecting us. And far too often, I think they frustrate us because traffic violations and we don't want to be held accountable for our own sins, if you will. But I think that we do put them in a corner, and it's absolutely wrong, and it's bullshit, to be blunt, so that we do. Mm. And John, I'd like to get your opinion on that, because you've actually
absolutely
seen it in those capacities.
Well, let me answer this in two questions, guys. Let me first say that my wildly audacious goal, my BHAG, is I want to support the individual, right? These are people. They, even if you do serve 30 years, oftentimes cops who serve 30 years typically start in their 20s, which means they retire in their 50s. And so they've still got, what, even just 10 years left until retirement age, perhaps, right? But by no means are you done, right? People don't retire for good at 50. That's a lot of life left. So the first is I want to support the individual. And I want to support the individual with law enforcement specific things. I want to, like my company suggests, Law Enforcement Connect. We want to connect resources to people, right? DOL Coach offers law enforcement training, right? So that you can take your intangible skill set perhaps and make it tangible, right? When you put that your project management certified on a resume, hey, that means something, right? Through the Institute of Project Management, through DOL. I mean, these all hold weight, these all hold value. So that's the first piece. The second piece really is to create a network of cops. One thing that police officers really don't do that the military really does a much more significant job with is staying connected when you're done. Like veterans can go up to veterans and, hey, Operation Iraqi Freedom, right? Or World War II vet, or we don't see many of those anymore, but, you know, Vietnam vet, right? Even if it's Air Force, Army, Marine Corps, Navy, it could be Royal Navy to U.S. Navy even, right? I mean, it's like, man, when did you serve? Where did you serve, right? Who did you serve with? Maybe I know those
conversation.
Guys. It's a conversation starter, right? And so one thing I really want to do is I really want to reduce the stigma of law enforcement. And this is getting back to your point about the underbelly, Angus, and then Scott as well. Really the point here is we have had with no official research, but just from what we see in the community these days, we've had more law enforcement support in the last 12 to 18 months than we've had in many, many years. We see blue line flags all over civilian vehicles, and not because they're cops. Usually that was like the telltale, like rookie, you know,
turnover police. Yeah. They've got the license plate and all that.
Right. The moto guys or whatever, you know, they're the ones who like, oh shoot, he's got the high and tight. I bet you he's a cop. Right. Or he's wearing the blue line shirt. Right. Mm-hmm. But you know, I want to reduce that stigma and create a network. So that's my wildly audacious goal. Is really to destigmatize law enforcement, even though I would say that a big differentiator between the veteran community and the law enforcement community is that our both clients on both sides of the fence are domestic and never foreign. So it's really, you know, a lot of other guys talk about mental awareness and mental health in law enforcement, but it's a big training issue as well. From the way that we train our cops is in law enforcement, it's called officer survival. And we're taught to always live in some state of readiness, some state of alertness. And, you know, for me, when I was serving, I lived inside my community. My level of alertness was always up, right? I was always in orange, what they, you know, orange, yellow, red, black, right? So I was always on alert. It made it extremely difficult for me to de-escalate in my own mind. You know, I had to, couldn't even do it for months and months until I realized that the threat wasn't out to get me, right? Like essentially I'd been trained through the law enforcement contingent. And so by destigmatizing law enforcement as a aggressive aggressor and less of a protector, right? Mm-hmm. I think that shift changed many years ago, but it was always to protect and serve. And with the officer survival mindset, or the state of readiness and alertness and awareness of your surroundings, it's really forced a lot of cops to live in a state of readiness and alertness that you can never de-escalate from, even at your own house. So
no, that's true. And it's not sustainable, right? If we all know that life is a marathon, you can't constantly be switched on every time you go to, at least, you know, as an right. Iraq and Afghanistan veteran, when I'm home,
right?
I can still have my concealed carry or whatever, but I don't have to look at going to the grocery store is, all right, I'm switched on and I'm ready for the threat in the grocery store. And I'm switched on, I'm ready to go to the movies, right? Like, you can't live like that. And you said something a few minutes ago, and I want to dive back to it, and it was value, right? You want to show the value that they bring. And I won't say that I'm like the only person saying this, but I'm sick and tired of military and law enforcement and those who serve being undersold on the value that they bring to external organizations, because just thinking about, you know, protecting and serving and criminal cases and investigations and anything else, that's a lot of adaptability. It's problem solving, it's real time, it's hands on, it's a lot of mental games, right? So all of those skills, problem solving, being adaptable, being integrous in your dealings with others, right? And realizing that you're always on the body cam, you're always on YouTube, or somebody's going to put on Facebook that you pulled them over in school zone, right? Or something.
Yeah.
That value is there. We've just got to make those people believe that there's more to post service life than being a gate guard or a Walmart. Or the joke in Special Forces is, you know, when I leave the teams, I'm going to go say, do you want fries with that, or welcome to Walmart, right? And so there's more to life than that, you know, and that's that value. So Angus, I had forgotten stupidly that you're multi-generation law enforcement as well prior to this episode, but again, right, do you see that in your family as well? Is that an international problem that they only think they're good at being coppers or police, that they're not good at more outside of that?
Joe, thanks for asking that, because it's like John says something, right? You said 30-year copper, retires at 50. That's my brother. You've just described my brother. He's literally 2 weeks ago walked out the door. And so I'm going to hold that bookmark there and come back to it in a minute. But my dad was a copper. We lived in our community, and a lot of my middle school and high school years were spent running to and from school. Otherwise, I'd get the caca kicked out of me by certain segments of society. And it was that thing about being permanently switched on. And one of the reasons I got into playing rugby, because it just helped me grow a bit and deal with sort of that combative edge of the community. So that was a really weird thing, because it's about, you know, I didn't know any better. I was just in a family, and suddenly you get targeted because of, in my case, the uniform that my dad wore. And then I come forward to my brother and I was just saying, man, you've been like 30 years in, and what are you going to do? And he went, I have no idea. I said, well, how do you feel? And he went, I really don't know. He said, I've got to walk out the door, and it's sort of, don't let the door hit your ass on the way out. Here's a thank you. But again, now here's a delineation. He's the last generation that's getting a pension, right? Because they've been deriving pensions now, because the government, the UK government, I don't know what the US is like. I spoke to one policeman in the rugby communities on the East Coast, and he said similar to me, saying, Angus, I'm really lucky I can do rugby stuff in the US because I'm one of the last generations of coppers who got a pension, right? The next generation are not, they're serving, but, you know, the financial status is different. So I look at my brother, who's clearly older than you, John. You look very young. and he's saying, well, at least I got a pension and I can live a good life. And he lives in his community as well. You know, and there's so many things emotionally resonating here on, because my dad was like a 70s copper. There was a show on the TV called The Sweeney in that, right? And it was like they'd all kick down your door and all smoking and drinking beers in the pub and all that. And it looked really cool growing up. But when you look back, you can see, right, that generation of copper is different to my brother's generation. which is different again to my granddad's generation. My granddad as a policeman was clearing up wreckage in the Blitz in London and you know, policing. And there's a thing about propaganda right there, right? It's so funny. People talk about the Blitz spirit in London and how everyone like pulled together. London's still full of scallywags, but even then there was people like black marketeering, moonlighting, like all that stuff going on back then still goes on now. So
I can't believe you just said scallywags. So.
So the thing that really resonated with me, John, is community is sort of, we're all part of the community. So how do we rub along and you know, how do we engender respect as a 360 degree thing, I suppose?
100%. I was talking to, so my wife, her grandfather was RCMP for 30 years, Royal Canadian Mounted Police. Yeah. And so he really hadn't spoken much about law enforcement or law enforcement in his career to many people until he met me, when I met him with my wife. But, you know, it was clear as day, from the moment he started talking about law enforcement, that it was an old style of law enforcement. Back then, you know, and not to detract anything from what cops are doing today, right? But it was totally different. It was a different society. It was a different community vibe. You know, we have to have initiatives like COP, community oriented policing, COP, right? In our community, we've got to have a COP. In many communities, awareness program. And you're like, I thought that was just the fundamentals of policing was community service, right? But then again, leave it to the community to figure out whether or not they're going to support, because, you know, it could literally be the difference between city limits, you know, from my city to the next city over could have a night and day difference in perspective of how they view and support their law enforcement. We saw that a lot in defunding the police, right? But the one thing that I, through LEC and through Law Enforcement Connect, that I absolutely don't want to lose focus on is that we serve together for years on end, right? Whether it's 4 years, 5 years, or 30, we kick down, you know, doors, we go into high-risk situations, or, you know, one of the most high-risk situations is even just a simple traffic stop. Right. The community doesn't understand that that is one of the most dangerous tasks a police officer can do. So, you know, it's a huge shame for law enforcement officers to serve any time in service and then essentially be what I've had described to me through my clients has been an excommunication from the law enforcement community. You leave and you're forgotten. Right. You turn in your badge and your gun and essentially you're forgotten. And I've had people challenge.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I've had people challenge me and say, you know, and these are current law enforcement officers, great guys. I know them well, but you know, the challenge is, well, if you left any job, you're not going to stay in touch with the entire office, right? You say, no, but it's also not an office job, right? The anticipation is that you serve together, they talk about a law enforcement family, right? They talk about a community of law enforcement officers. And you want to believe when you go into law enforcement, again, you know, this is a flaw with recruiting, but the military recruits with the end in mind. I mean, the commercials you see on TV for the U.S. Army are like, this is what you're going to do in the Army. This is how you're going to progress. And then this is how you're going to transition out. And the way that they show that is by showing commercials with both a military dock in a tent somewhere sandy, and then they do a big transition move in the commercial, TV commercial, and all of a sudden they're in scrubs in a civilian hospital, right? And why law enforcement hasn't figured that one out yet, I'm not sure, but you're not going to have top quality candidates consistently applying voluntarily. You know, if you cannot figure out the recruiting aspect of, look, this is a worthy cause. It is absolutely worth it. Money is not the reason we go into law enforcement or the military, but it's a service factor that exceeds surpasses the money aspect of it by far, right?
And talk is cheap, right? So we're talking, you know, and talk is, and that's one of the reasons I resonate so much with you is when a year and a half ago, you had the idea for LEC and you were starting to get the pieces together and everything else.
Right.
And I've watched it grow from the sidelines. And I love those who execute, right? And I think that here's a differentiator as well. Those who serve, no matter, you know, whether you're a teacher or you're, you know, serving in a public school or you're a police officer or military or a nurse in a hospital, if you're serving, you're executing and giving back to others. And yet as a society, we're criticizing you at every point possible, right? We're the bad guys on, you know, for the military, it's the every scene in Law and Order or anywhere else is the military veterans in the line at the bank. And all of a sudden he's like having a flashback to his buddy getting blown up in a Humvee and he's got the cold sweat and he's about to rip the teller from across because he's in this PTSD moment. Right. And I'm going, we're not doing ourselves any favors by putting this stuff out there. And then police officers are even more just crucified in the public realm. We're defunding, we're doing whatever. And at the same time, we're not rewarding their service at all. And that boggles my mind that we do have any type of recruitment because one of the things that blew me away, like I've lived overseas a large part of my life and a lot of different cultures view their military as kind of like, oh, where you weren't good enough for university. And it's the same way for police over here, right? It's like, oh, look, he's a cop. Kind of, isn't that cute? You know, he's a police officer. And I'm going, that person, that young person, male, female, whatever, black, white, Hispanic, anything, has a desire to serve their community despite all the negativity everywhere across social media and everything. And yet we're putting them in the corner and telling them, like, when you're broken, that's it, you're broken, you're no longer valuable. And it pisses me off to my core because you give up a large portion of your life and you work random hours and you're being told what to do. And it is truly service, not for a great paycheck. So what is something about just the whole thing, Hollywoodisms, fact versus fiction, whatever, what is something that really pisses you off about the portrayal of law enforcement in society today? Like, let's get it out there now and air it so that people can talk about it. Putting you on the spot.
Putting you on the spot here, John.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's really, I love that point, Scott. But one thing that's actually been really encouraging to me and also really frustrating was Live PD, the TV show on A&E, I believe, was the most watched TV show on the entire television. I mean, for I think many seasons, even. I'm spitballing. I don't have the facts here, but I know that it was an extremely popular television show and reminiscent of the old Cops TV show. But two things that I really enjoyed about watching that TV show is it did not portray police officers in a negative light. It showed the real life, real world, right? The challenges and the opportunities. And, you know, I heard a lot of people even saying stuff like, why in the world would you? And of course, now in today's world, there's social media and there's chats and, you know, you can follow the discussion online as the episode airs, right? I mean, commentators that are live, they're flipping back and forth from city to city. But it was, you know, I think it did a lot of good for law enforcement. But one thing that I absolutely think, I think that Hollywood really doesn't do law enforcement justice by creating, like, it's more possible now, but like to sit here and say, like, you can scan a DNA, you know, sample or a fingerprint.
The CSI factor, right? Like,
yeah, immediately get a result. And you're like, oh, that's John Doe. And you're like, what? Wait, from a law enforcement perspective, you can't tell from a blood spatter, like who the guy's, what his middle name was, right? I mean, they're good. I just don't know that they're that good yet. But I think by and large, I think, like I said before, I think that the community in general, we've got some pockets of people and pockets of segments and groups that still want to defund the police and still don't see the value, the traditional value of protecting and serving. And what service means is not necessarily patting your ego on the back, mm-hmm. But it's simply saying right is right and wrong is wrong. I mean, that's what has to be done.
Out here, and Scott, you said something the other day. Oh yeah, it's two things that come up, and I tried to understand them, and I haven't dug into either of them because logically, there's no rationale there. So I don't. It's like Twitter. The Twitterverse is completely irrational to me, so I don't really engage in it. Cancel culture and defunding the police. I just don't comprehend what either of those things really mean. So help me out with one of those. Defunding the police. Let's stay on topic. What's the point? What does that achieve?
It achieves nothing. So I'm probably going to irritate any future listener as soon as they hear me say this out loud, if they vote for one side of the house versus the other. But so to be clear, I don't identify as either Democrat or Republican or libertarian, whatever. I'm a constitutionalist, right? So I believe in the US Constitution and as being one of the greatest documents written by man, and the freedoms that it protects and gives all of us, right? Should be protected at all points. So when I think of defunding the police, I think of taking tax dollars. And that's a whole other argument, right, about pork spending and where tax dollars go and all this other stuff. But again, I have the unique perspective of having lived overseas in an economy which was very heavily taxed for a long time, to see the benefits of that in air quotes. And there are no benefits to it. There are zero benefits to it at all. So the guise, as far as I'm concerned, is that defunding the police allows more tax dollars to go back to the community in a better way. And yet we're entrusting the people who are poorly spending our tax dollars to make those decisions for us instead of allowing for the safety of all citizens. And when you look up, you know, defunding the police horror stories online or something, right, you'll see, used to be formerly affluent neighborhoods being knocked on the door by police departments to say, we can no longer protect you in this area anymore, so our advice is that you leave. And these people are going, what? So yeah. You know, now there should, the caveat to all of that, and I'll let John answer as well, is there should always be a right size, right? You know, if you go to a wealthier area and there's 16 cops per civilian, right? And when you spit, you know, they're writing you a ticket right there and stuff, you know, so there should always be a right size effort. I don't want to see a community go overserved, and I don't want to see a community go underserved, but that's the same rationale as teaching or nurses or doctors or anything else, right? So that's just simple math as far as I'm concerned. So it goes both ways. But I can talk cancel culture a lot better than I can talk defunding the police, but I don't understand it because it makes zero sense to my squirrel brain, for sure.
Yeah, I mean, if I can jump in here, you know, one thing that we've heard this before, that if you don't learn history, you're doomed to repeat it. And we can look, just go to Central America, and you can use this example as defunding the cops here in America, and you can see examples of this as well, is that down in Central America and South America, and perhaps around the world, is that it's run by gangs, right? A lot of the community and society is run by gang mentality, right? And so it's not that one gang, oh, you want to eliminate one gang, well, what happens? The next gang moves in. It's not like you're just eliminating
a vacuum,
right? And so what did we see out in Seattle, right? I mean, at Chalk and Chaz, they eliminated the cops, but who stepped in? It was a civilian group of rulemakers, right? It didn't work well. But that's what we saw. We saw it wasn't an absent of, it was just a replacement for. And so defunding the police actually absolutely makes zero sense. And all you're going to do is you're going to drive out the good people, right, by eliminating officers. And the other thing we've seen near and dear to my heart is the city of Atlanta. And, you know, we've seen police officers leave in droves, to the point where the more affluent north side of the city is saying, we're going to succeed from the city of Atlanta. We're going to leave and we're going to form our own city. We're going to pay our police officers extremely well. They're going to have the best equipment, and you're more than welcome to join us here. And so I haven't followed that story to date. I don't know where they stand, but I would say by and large, the law-abiding citizens will not allow a defund the police movement to exist and continue to exist because they understand the need for law and order.
So Angus, when my sons have a question or something that makes no sense, I'll typically, and they know this now, so I had to explain it to them, educate them on it, but I'll answer with, it's communism. And what I mean is, communism is perfect, right? It's a great idea on paper until people get involved, right? Like if you think about a utopian society to where we're all sharing equally and there's no, and Orwell wrote Animal Farm. I made both of my teenagers read Animal Farm, by the way, but you know, he wrote in the 30s, right? So it's awesome until people get involved. And so all of these ideas like communism, defund the police, let's go to a socialist, this, that, whatever, it's all great until people get involved. And that is a downfall of everything. So it's crazy when we don't recognize, like John said, when you don't understand history, you're doomed to repeat it. And yet we're whitelisting history that's able to be taught in schools, right? Oh, we can't talk that because it's inconvenient, or in all these other terms. And it drives me insane, because as a constitutionalist, right, I want free speech. I want us to all know and to be appreciative. There's no hate in my heart towards anyone. I don't care what your sexual orientation is, the color of your skin, whether you have hair like I do or you don't have hair like you guys, whatever it is, right? Like either way, I don't care, because I'm a Christian as well, and I want to believe in all people and I want to help. So when you're putting those at risk because of an ideology, that's where we start to have a diversity of opinion that I can't subscribe to, or diversification of opinion that I can't subscribe to at all.
You spoke earlier, John, about always being mentally switched on, always being primed, which is fatiguing in itself. There's no way to decompress, right, and switch off. But then you've got this over here in the US, I would say, more so than almost any other country I've been in the world, this underlying political tension that's always there. How do you straddle that? How do you manage that? Is it just a base human being?
That's a great question. You know, I think here in the US, I mean, we are constantly plagued by having to fit a mold either right or left. We have to either... And it's refreshing to hear people say, I'm not a Republican or a Democrat, right? I'm an independent, or I'm a constitutionalist, or, you know, somewhere in the middle where I agree with this aspect, but I don't have to agree with 100% of this candidate's viewpoints. And I can agree with half here and half there. And so it's going to be a really tough, you know, decision for me come election day, right? But from a law enforcement perspective, I think a lot of you've heard of the classic guys like Mark Zuckerberg and Mark Cuban, and they wear like one outfit every day, right? And it reduces. Yeah, I mean, it reduces.
The number of times Angus has seen me in this T-shirt is probably scary. So.
The frequency of Scott's wardrobe by now.
Yeah. This Monday and Tuesday and.
Embrace the suck. That's all I have to say. It's a message.
Hey, that's a great shirt, though. If you got to choose one, that's a great shirt. Second choice would be this one, but I think in a lot of weird ways, I think that a lot of people just ignore it. You ignore the political noise. I mean, because essentially that's what it is. It's based off opinion. It's not based off fact, right? This is, I feel this way. And that's a lot of society is really bought into that, that mentality of like, wait a minute, it doesn't matter what you feel, right? Right is right and wrong is wrong. And if I can prove 2 + 2 = 4, it doesn't matter that you think it's 5. And so I think that's why a lot of police officers get grief as well, because you get this whole entitled mentality of like, do you know who my dad is? Do you know who I am? Right. You know, this is the stuff that cops are dealing with every day, the first time you hear it, I won't ever forget the first time I heard that on the road, you know, traffic stop. Do you know who my dad is? And I remember just almost just laughing out loud, but I was able to hold it in. But it was like, who cares? Right. You still can't do 35 miles over the speed limit or whatever the case was. Right. Whatever the reason I pulled that person over that day. But, I think entitlement is, and I don't know if this is a global issue or an American issue, but entitlement does not justify the means, right? And I think a lot of cops get burned out for that reason is, I don't care anymore. That's why you see, in my opinion, that's what I've personally seen. That's the stories I've heard is, I can't do it anymore. And the reason is because people aren't basing their opinions or their cause on right and wrong. It's based on how I feel about the situation. What do you think about that?
I agree. I think the entitlement is horrible. In fact, I got in trouble a few months back. Not in trouble, that's a bit dramatic. I kind of stepped on it a little bit a few months back because I said a group of Green Berets, and I really pissed off one of the group when I said, I dislike former Green Berets who have let themselves go and are now fat asses, and they're the first person to tell you that they're a Green Beret and all this other stuff, right? Like, if you're going to advertise how badass you are, at least maybe try and look a tiny bit like a badass, you know, and don't rely right on what you did yesterday. Not to go all Navy SEAL on you, like the only easy day was yesterday and stuff, right? But, you know, and again, everybody saw my LinkedIn post about don't be entitled, you know, for all this. And so whether you serve, and that's what I try and tell people when I coach them through transition or entrepreneur efforts or anything, is it doesn't matter what DOL did. We're recording a podcast in an hour that's talking about the year of DOL, right? And as soon as that's done, we're going to celebrate the roughly 12,000 people that we've gotten trained and all this other stuff and the highs and the lows and this and that. As soon as that's done, I'm looking to next year. I don't get to go into January through June next year and go, but we trained 12,000 people last year. It doesn't matter what you did, right? So it's a defining part of you. And I'll go back to that value piece, right? Like, if you're a cop and all you want to do is sit down and tell war stories about being a SWAT daddy or being, you know, a state trooper or whatever, cool. Go do that. You're not bringing value to anybody else by living in yesterday. If you're an Army person, a Marine, anybody else, you're not bringing any current value. It defines who we are. And serving always is a massive piece of my core and who I am. I don't regret any of it, but I can't rely on that, right? And too many of us want to rely on what we did yesterday as an excuse for not doing anything tomorrow. And that's what about America. And that's a uniquely American problem right now, is that we are a very entitled society. And I frankly don't care who I piss off by saying that, because until we learn to earn what we get and we go out, hunt, kill, bring back to the cave and sacrifice for it, we're doing ourselves a disservice and we will never achieve the success that we desire. Angus's hand raised emoji.
Yeah, so I see that. To your point, Scott, number one, first thing I say is, I truly believe the majority of people in society really don't comprehend the good of the police. They don't understand. And my niece is a victim of domestic abuse. She works in a legal office that deals with domestic abuse. No one even wants to talk about domestic abuse, let alone cleaning up road traffic accidents, dealing with suicides, all this banana. Some of the stuff over here that people say, you know, I can sort of see where some of it's coming from, but equally, we need to have a discussion. I've lived in a totalitarian state. I've been on the wrong end of a shakedown. Not in this country, but in other countries. I know what it's like, right? And you know what got me through is understanding the police. Because there is a thing, is people in the police, the vast majority of the time, are actually pretty good people who are serving a community. And they're serving the rule of law in their country as their country has the rule of law set up. But what I'm coming to is, I remember the one time, this one story is, even though it's like a couple of times I got a shakedown, you have to be very streetwise. There was one day when the 2007 bombing went off in London, and the local equivalent of the FBI, who I had a really strong relationship. So if things did go south a few times, I'd give them a call and say, can you help out? And he would. We had a good relationship. But he called me and he said, I know what your brother does. You might want to check in at home, make sure he's okay. But I was on a train from City A to City B in this country. I had no access to mainstream media. Talk about, and this is what I'm coming back around to, John, because this is that sort of ecosystem of the boys in blue and the women in blue. How do we make that? How do we ask two questions? How do we get people really to do understand the net worth of folks who've served in particularly on the domestic front? And how do we connect those dots? And I know your companies or your organization's setting up for that, but what are your top one or two ideas around making those connections?
Yeah, as we've been talking in the last 5 minutes, excuse me, but as we've been talking the last 5 minutes, something actually crossed my mind. And there are natural responses that we get and we've seen even across the media. But let me give you a couple examples of these natural reactions and responses that I'm talking about, right? When a child gets hurt, they call for mom, right? When you get in a bind, right? Let me reference it this way. I've heard the saying said that there's no atheist in a foxhole, right? So the first thing when you get in a jam, you're like, oh God, and you start praying, right? Or you're whoever's up there, right? Whoever your God is, right? For some of us, the Christian God, others globally, others. But the third thing that we've seen consistently over the past 24 months has been even these people in CHOP and CHAZ, first thing that happens is call the cops, right? Inherently, people know that cops are good. That is the default mechanism, call the cops, right? Not in other countries, but in America, call the police. They're here to sort it out, right? And so I don't think it's too much of a stretch. And one thing that LEC and I am really working on is building rapport in the community. But I think by demonstrating and showing that cops can make valuable additions to teams in a civilian market, right? I think a lot of times cops don't say that they were police officers because they're unsure of what the reaction from their coworkers and peers would be, their boss, right? Are they going to blacklist themselves because, you know, perhaps somebody got a DUI when they were 20, right? Or 21 or 25. And now all of a sudden they hate police officers for the rest of their life. And now because you were a cop, not the one that pulled them over for DUI, even if you were guilty of DUI, it's just that natural reaction, right? It's the natural transaction of being in law enforcement. But I think that by eliminating the stigma that all cops are bad and saying, hey, look, through DOL coach, you've now got some meat and potatoes on top of. So there's you got to have your hard skills and your soft skills, right? There's the hardware, the software, and the humanware. And a lot of police officers are very, very well adapted to be critical thinkers, to be conflict resolution managers, to be de-escalation practitioners, right? Problem solvers, and constantly thinking outside the box because no situation is the same. Go ahead.
There's another one that you didn't say, which I'll give you guys bigger credit for, is communicators as well, right? You communicate. The number of I will admit it's a guilty habit, but I'll get sucked down a YouTube rabbit hole of, you know, police interactions or, you know, body cam footage or whatever, just because it fascinates me that someone, and John, you're doing it today on the show a little bit, right? Like you're so measured in what you communicate, and it's great. It's like, it's a compliment. I'm not bashing you at all, but if I was having some of these situations as disciplined as I am in so many areas of my life, and someone was constantly taunting or whatever, right? Like the communication level of a normal street policeman in these environments, is it that of like 10x their peers of the same age and group? And you said, you know, critical thinking and conflict resolution and communication, those three C's are desperately missing in the fourth C, corporate America. And
right,
man, we need it. And that's, again, back to that value. And yet, I love your mission because I don't see other people out there saying this is what we're good at and this is how we can help you translate that into network and get into those areas and get to where you want to be, leaving who you were, honoring that, but going to where you should be and being successful in that endeavor as well.
I think if we had more police officers as youth coaches, we'd have more kids back in sport. And the All Blacks, the last All Blacks kind of boring everyone rugby, because I always talk about rugby. Everything comes back to rugby in the universe, basically. I don't need to know that right now. But like the last
start doing like a haka here.
Right, the All Blacks, New Zealand rugby team, their last head coach, former police officer. Right? One of the top teams in the English Premiership, former police officer. Yeah, I think police officers make great coaches. And
there's another piece for Law Enforcement Connect, John. Law enforcement, elite coaching.
Absolutely.
Well, tell us where we can find you. We're at 52 minutes, and so tell us where we can find you and where people can connect with you as well. Give us your socials before Angus gives you the wrap-up.
Absolutely. So the website's live. It's lawenforcementconnect.com, and we're also on LinkedIn. So find us there for sure. We're, you know, the biggest thing that I want to leave you guys with is a police officer from Chicago actually told me this last week. And he said, you know, the biggest takeaway from Law Enforcement Connect is just knowing somebody's out there. Right. We're going through the same thing, having been there and done that. Right. I mean, imagine being the first Green Beret to leave the Green Berets. Right. Imagine any first, right? I mean, I could sit here for days and talk about any first, but being the first to the pioneer of anything. And that's why Law Enforcement Connect has taken me so long to launch, to be quite honest with you, is because there's no map. There was no, and so we're basically fitting in where we can fit in, right? And we're looping in resources that make sense to loop in. And so project management is absolutely a logical people, communication, right? It loops right into both our mission and where we want to see ourselves grow as well.
What's your biggest hope and what's your biggest concern? And we can wrap up with that.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I started with the mission. I work very closely with a PhD professor in industrial and organizational psychology from one of the large universities here in the States. And, you know, he and I were crafting a mission statement and just brainstorming. And I said out loud, I said, you know, my goal is to help 1 million cops. That's what I want to do is 1 million. You know, yeah, there's millions. The irony is that unfortunately, it's a cyclical. We run in cycles. I mean, the average law enforcement officer doesn't serve more than 10 years in the U.S. And so, unfortunately, we're going to have a cycle of people who are going to continuously and constantly need help. And so as we grow, I want to build a mentor network. And it's really just about helping people. It's not about I have to say this. We are not a nonprofit. But my goal is to help. And the reason is because I want to show cops that you can actually make money. It's okay to make money. I mean, you don't have to be apologetic by any means, shape or form, but I want to help other police officers be successful through their career. And thank you for your time. This has been incredible.
No, we're here to help. And I just put in the chat that I think that's a better title, Help 1 million Cops. So now that is your BHAG, your big, hairy, audacious goal. And we're going to do what we need to do to help you out as well. So everybody connect with John, please. Angus, John, thank you guys so much for your time today. God bless both of you. And John, we're standing by to help the next 999. Anyway, excellent. I'm going to massacre that.